Well, on the occasion of our nation's 244th birthday, we are given these gracious words of the gospel to provide, I think, context for what we celebrate as a nation. When we come to the 4th of July weekend every year, it's perhaps a practice for some of us, or at least a memory for some of us, to recall the days of the founding of our nation, most especially that beautiful founding document, the Declaration of Independence, which was given right to the nation that was birthed on July 4th by the delegates from 13 colonies. And we're all, I think, very familiar with some of the opening lines right after the sort of the preamble of that document. The opening lines are very well known, some of the most famous in our American history, and they are words that we all learned in our fifth grade social studies class, if any of you can recall, that the opening lines of the Declaration of Independence are these: "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." The thesis statement that would define the liberty of our nation, a nation which was born out of a great frustration with a king, the British Crown, who acted as a tyrant towards these American colonies. And in the Declaration of Independence, our forebears would go through and name, this is why we are separating from the British Crown. Because even as we attempt to be loyal subjects of Great Britain, we are not given any sort of legitimate legislature, because the king continues to absolve our legislatures so that we can make no laws for our own people. We have no legitimate judiciary, because the king only appoints those judges that are loyal to him who receive bribes on behalf of the crown. We have no redress against the injustices of the British military and the British diplomats who come to rule over us. We are taxed without representation. We have sorely tried over and over and over to make amends, to make peace, to make just decisions with the crown, and we have continued to fail in frustrating fashion. And I say, for all of these reasons, our displeasure, in effect, with the king causes us to have to make the decision for ourselves to be born as our own nation, conceived on the proposition of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And so the experiment of American democracy was born. That sort of communal, national context of this weekend is paired alongside of our gospel from the 11th chapter of Matthew. And what we heard in these five verses, that gospel passage, is often called the pearl of Matthew's gospel, the very sort of golden nugget. Now, it's an interesting moment in the gospel because on either side of it, we didn't hear those words, but on either side of that passage is, right, the story of the ministry of the life of Jesus. It's going along, and then all of a sudden it abruptly stops and we get this, like, aside, as it were. Where all of a sudden, out of the blue, Jesus suddenly exclaims, "I give praise to you, Father, for although you have hidden these things from the wise and the learned, you have revealed them to the childlike." And it's the only place in any of the four Gospels where Jesus says the phrase, "Learn from me." The only moment ever that is recorded where Jesus says this is in Matthew 11. "Learn from me." Now, we can learn a lot of things from Jesus. We're meant to learn everything from Jesus, but the very place where he commands us to learn most especially is by this: "Learn from me, because I'm meek, because I'm humble of heart, and you will find rest. And you will take my yoke upon you and my burden upon you, and they'll be easy, they'll be light." Jesus is giving reference to that prophecy that we heard in the first reading from the prophet Zechariah. And Zechariah says, "Rejoice, because your king comes to you, and your king will come to you meek and humble, riding on a donkey, the symbol of peace, not the war horse, the symbol of conquest." And when your king comes to you, he will proclaim peace from sea to sea, for his dominion shall be to the ends of the earth, and he will banish the chariot and the war horse and the warrior's bow. That's the king that was promised by God to the people, the kingdom that would last forever. That king would be the king of peace. And when Jesus came to call himself the king of peace, learn from me, for I am the fulfillment of that prophecy. I am meek. I am humble. He would ride into Jerusalem. He would take that city on a donkey, not on a war horse. But it wasn't the king that his people wanted. And much like the American colonies rejected their unjust king, so the people of Israel rejected the king that they received because it wasn't the king that they wanted. They wanted a Messiah that would come to relieve them of the burden of being occupied by the Roman Empire. They wanted to no longer pay the pagan taxes. They wanted the people to be gathered together. They wanted the kingdom of God to be spread over all the earth. They wanted the temple to be cleansed of all unrighteousness. They had all kinds of ideas as to what the Messiah, the king, should be. And Jesus was not that king. And so he was rejected and ultimately killed. The American experiment of democracy was also, right, based upon this displeasure with a kind of king that the American people didn't want. Now, of course, the king of England was unjust. Jesus is always righteous. But in the day of the people of Israel, in Jesus' day, so also in the day of our founding fathers, and so also in our own generation, every generation has to make this decision. How will we be governed? Who will lead us? The American experiment of democracy says this, that the powers of the government are given to them by the consent of the governed. Those are words in the Declaration of Independence. And yet, for any nation to be blessed by God, even the governed must be governed by a higher power. They can't simply govern themselves. Now, unfortunately, we live in a world and a culture today that pretty much has totally rejected that. We no longer pledge allegiance to the country, but we pledge allegiance to me, myself, and I, to whatever good that I want, so long as it's good for me and I'm not hurting anybody else, nobody's hurting me. This is how we all get to act towards each other, right? Ugh. And what does that bring about ultimately? Does that make us one nation? Does it make us one people? Or does it ultimately lead to division and strife and suffering and all of the isms, racism, bigotry, sexism, all of that? Ultimately, me pledging allegiance to myself and my own good is what dissolves and disintegrates a nation. Now, what's really fascinating about the Declaration of Independence is that most of us can recognize the opening lines, but perhaps most of us don't remember the very final sentence of that document. The very final sentence of that document, I think, contain words that are as profound as its opening lines, and its closing lines are this. And for the support of this declaration, with firm reliance upon the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. And beneath those words were the signatures of delegates of 13 colonies. In order to pursue life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, right? They said, in order for us to accomplish that, we must firmly resolve to lean upon the protection of divine providence and make an intentional decision to pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. And our forebears believe that if we do these things, we will be blessed and our nation will be one people. And our nation was blessed. And 244 years later, we are the recipients of extraordinary blessing. Any of us can read from the pages of all human history and come to find out that amongst all peoples of all times, of all places, this country at this place and this time, by many measures, is probably the most blessed of the blessed of the blessed of the blessed that there ever was. And think about this. It was not your decision nor mine to be born in this place at this time. That was God's gift to you and to me. But just as every generation makes a decision as to how it will live as one community, one family, we too in our generation have to make the same decision in this American democracy. And to be able to hear the words of Jesus this day, I think, are so important for context and perspective, because we know in our day that blessed as we are, we do still have our issues and our problems. All of the isms that are out there. We are never going to live in a world free of injustice. We are never going to live in a world free of people who are racist. We are never going to live in a world where nobody is greedy, where nobody is envious, where nobody seeks to have power, where nobody leads by might makes right. It's just not going to happen. And we do have to work against those things. But in order to do so as a nation, we have to be able to look to the King who governs all things. And to follow his example, did Jesus know that he came to make the world righteous? Yes. Did he do that by the ways of the Roman Empire? Or even by the wishes of his own people? No. Jesus said, I come to bring peace, to restore what was lost to mankind in his sin. And in order to bring peace again, I will be the King who is meek and who is humble. Those are not virtues that are celebrated in our democracy. We know that. But they are some of the greatest weapons of warfare there are for our nation. To be meek is this. It's a virtue. It is the virtue that moderates anger, and especially the disordered effects of anger. Because even when anger is righteous over true injustice, that anger can be expressed in unhealthy ways, which are splattered all over the headlines of our media in our present day. People who are even upset about injustices that no longer ought to be, yet in order to fix those, seem to decide that revolution, anarchy, and discord is the way forward. And it's not. It can't be. Meekness is the virtue that unifies what is divided, because meekness says, though there is anger, it will not overcome me. It is a virtue of extraordinary strength, because it says, whatever injustice I receive, it stops with me. I will not pass it on. I will not reflect it back into the world. I make a decision to be like my King, to be governed, to be ruled by righteousness, so that what the world does not know, the wise and the learned, what has been hidden from them has been revealed to me, which is mercy and forgiveness and reconciliation. That's what stops hate. That's what stops division. And in the very words of our own founding document, I believe those words were inspired by God, because what do those words remind us? Those words remind us that in order to be one nation and one people, we have to decide that we don't belong to ourselves, but that we belong to each other. And that's exactly what they said. We pledge mutually to each other. It wasn't the nation of me and myself. It was the nation of we. So today, when we rightly celebrate the extraordinary blessings of our Father in heaven, and we thank him for all kinds of amazing blessings that other peoples at other times in history could never have even imagined, and even as we hold the struggle and the strife that does remain in our world and in our country at this time, where we can feel divided and isolated, and we remember that how Jesus reveals himself as King was not only peace for his people, but is peace for our nation. Democracy that we are, we also must have a King. And we can renew that resolve in imitation of Jesus by repeating and by living the very concluding words of our own declaration. That in support of this nation, with firm reliance upon the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor.